From our family to your family, this is A Legacy of Faith, the podcast. Welcome to A Legacy of Faith, the podcast designed to help your family survive the day, plan for tomorrow, and always keep an eye on eternity. We hope that you are enjoying the program. Hope you're having a good holiday season. And if you're anything like us, your holiday season is already running and rolling and busy and crazy, but you want to make memories with your kids. You want to make sure that there are things that they look back on fondly this time of year, but also every time of year. And to help us with that, I have invited Dale Jenkins to join me on the program this week. Dale is a good friend, a great preacher, and just a good man, good family man as well. And if there's anyone who exemplifies what it means to be busy, it is Dale. He's involved in so many good things, and we're thankful for that. I recorded an interview with him some time ago and want to share that with you for this week's program. I think you're going to find this very, very helpful if you want to make sure that you are making memories with your kids, for your kids, and encouraging them all throughout the year. But we mentioned, of course, the Christmas season a lot because there are a lot of family traditions this time of year, but also just a lot of busyness this time of year. So I hope you enjoy this interview conducted with Dale Jenkins, and then I'll be back with you when the interview is over to close up the program this week. Thank you for joining us.
As we said in the introduction, we are pleased to be joined this week by Dale Jenkins. Dale, welcome to the program.
That sounds familiar to me for some reason.
it used to be, Dale, it's good to be with you again this week because you and I have done, I don't know, 6, 7 podcasts together before.
Oh, yeah, we did quite a number of them with I Preach for years and years and always enjoyed that time with you, Adam. Good to be back with you on this podcast. Appreciate all that you and all of your family do. You all make a real impact for the kingdom and a lot of individuals' lives. So thank you for
I appreciate that. And we feel the same way about you and your family. You and your brother Jeff run the Jenkins Institute and help preachers and church leaders a whole lot. And you and your family are great encouragers of us. And yeah, you and I have done a few podcasts. In fact, I was thinking, you know, when we get through with this podcast this morning, recording this morning, we will have done almost as many episodes of this as we did of the Pages podcast.
It failed Pages podcast. We tried. I think we did 4 of them, if I remember right. I don't think any of them were really good, to be honest with that. Yeah. But it was a good idea.
It was a good idea to do a book review podcast and book kind of a book club podcast. I think we did 4. And one of those, you were in a restaurant and I was at Fried Hardeman in the lobby of a dorm. And we figured, you know, we might be too busy to be doing this.
Yeah, it didn't work too well.
It was worth trying.
Academic rigor is at its worst.
That's a good way of putting it. Well, for the the handful of people who listen to this program who might not know you, let's focus in a little about who Dale Jenkins is and get kind of the Cliff Notes introduction.
Well, Dale's pretty unimportant. I'm just a guy that preaches and writes, and I love doing both. I've been preaching for about 35 years now. I've been with the Spring Baptist Congregation here in Spring Hill for 10 years, and Adam back about 3 months ago, this work became my longest work, the longest I've been at any one place. So anybody listening out there, I am looking. I told my elders that. I've told the church that. They haven't taken the hint yet and fired me, in advance. But no, I'm not really. I love what I am. I love what I get to do. I'm blessed to be a part of a really fine congregation that's led well by good elders. And then, as you say, I write, with the Jenkins Institute. Jeff and I do a lot of stuff, hopefully, to encourage those in ministry and other Christians as well. But that's basically what I do. I'm a granddad now, and that's a lot of fun. I've got 3 grandchildren. My son, Philip, is the youth minister over at the Mount Juliet Congregation. He's blessed to get to work with David Shannon. And my son, Andrew, is the youth minister at Woodson Chapel, and he's blessed to work with Wesley Walker, and they both are married, Andrew and Philip. Andrew's wife is Katie, and they have our granddaughter, who's 8 months old. Her name is Mamie Grace. And then my son Philip and his wife Laura have our other two grandchildren, Lucas, who is 4, and Holly, who is 3. And it is a delight to be around your grandkids. Everything that everybody ever says about grandchildren does prove to be true. So that's kind of my life these days, and blessed to get to live it and be a part of a lot of good stuff.
Well, we appreciate everything that you do. And you kind of hinted there at the very end, kind of where we're going with this week's program, and you get to be a part of a lot of good stuff. And to anyone who knows you, I always ask one question. In fact, I have literally, I think, texted you or emailed you at one point or something before with this question: how in the world do you do everything you do? and I think, you know, anybody who knows you has kind of wondered that before. You know, what's the secret sauce? But we're not going to unpack that so much today because we don't have that much time. You're too busy. but we do want to think about the fact that, you know, we live in a world where we are busy. People are just busy with whatever line of work they are in. We're trying to raise kids, trying to be parents, trying to maybe take care of older parents. But those of us who are parents, or in your case, parents and grandparents, we want to think about some things that we want to make sure to continue to make memories, because we can get so busy in our lives that we aren't intentionally building in those memories for our kids. So when I thought of, you know, who's someone who is busy, I had a list of one, and you were it. But because you're a busy man, but I've heard you talk, and I've heard your son talk before about, you know, things you all have done together, memories they have, and I thought, okay, if there's anybody who's qualified to talk about this, it's Dale Jenkins. And so, Dale, I know before we start recording, you said you had done something that, you know, we don't allow on this program. You had prepared. That's not allowed here. but kind of get us going here. What are some things that parents need to do, to, even though we're busy, to make sure that we are building memories with our kids?
Well, with your forbearance and permission, I want to kind of play off of your words you used about 8 or 10 times, that word busy. I don't know if you're familiar. I know you're familiar with Eugene Peterson. He of course, many listeners will know he wrote The Message, which is a paraphrase of the New Testament, of the Bible, actually. Not an excellent one, but an interesting one, I guess we could say. But before he did The Message, he wrote some deeply insightful and helpful books for ministers. He wrote a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, which was on the Psalms of Ascent. He wrote a book called Under the Unpredictable Plant, which is a book about ministering in the same place for a long time. My brother Jeff says every preacher should read it every year. But he wrote one, and I'm going to use a term here that I hope our listener will forbear with me in it, called The Contemplative Pastor. I am not a pastor, but you know, I understand the use of the term in the larger world religiosity. And right. The interesting thing when we think about this book is, if you don't mind, I want to just share with you a couple of things that he said as we get started.
Sure.
The opening line of the book, and I would never have bought a book called Contemplative Pastor had it not been that Peterson's name was on it. But he wrote this. This is how he started the book. The one piece of mail certain to go unread into my wastebasket is the one addressed to the busy pastor. Not that the phrase doesn't describe me at times, but I refuse to give my attention to someone who encourages what is worst in me. And he goes on and talks about, you know, this, you know, we use that word busy for flattery and for sympathy. You know, the poor guy, he's so devoted to the congregation. He works endlessly, he sacrifices tirelessly and unstingingly. He's so busy, so important, and he quotes Hilary of Tours, who used a phrase that called busyness, preacher busyness, a blasphemous anxiety to do God's work for him. And Peterson says we're busy for two reasons, and he says both are bad. He says, one, I'm busy because I'm vain. I want to appear to be important and significant. And he hit right between the eyes in both of these. The other one, he said, I'm busy because the other reason I'm busy is because I'm lazy. I let other people decide what I do instead of resolutely deciding what I'm going to do myself. And he quotes from C.S. Lewis, and he says, only lazy people work hard. It's really a powerful, powerful book. And he closes that section with this. He says, how can I lead people into a quiet place beside the still waters if I'm in perpetual motion? How can I convincingly persuade a person to live by faith and not by works if I have to constantly juggle my schedule and make everything fit in place? And so with that background, I want to talk to you about how to be busy.
Okay.
No, I'm seriously, you know, he really did hit me strong because, you know, that phrase busy is so often used and used to describe, you know, some of us, you're that way, you know, I get so busy. And he's right. I mean, we miss it sometimes there. Mm-hmm. So without derailing what you're saying, how do I live this life that is busy without being busy? I mean, Peterson
right.
even confesses at the first, you know, it's not a phrase that doesn't describe me at times. It does describe me at times. But how do I live in this busy life without letting business control me? So I've got five things I wrote down, and we'll just walk through them if you want to. Number one I wrote down is plan properly. Plan properly. If I want to make memories in the midst of a busy life, I've got to plan properly. I heard a guy years ago, and I'm not even sure who it was. I want to say it was Rick Warren who asked this question, do you live your life with any margin? And he said, margin is where you write what you write on the sides of everything else you're doing. And he says, if you don't have any margin in your life, there's no space in your life to enjoy life. And he says, you need to have margin in your budget. You need to have margin in your schedule. You need to have margin in everything you do, he said. I thought it was a powerful point. So
yeah.
Part of it is planning properly, all right? I look at my calendar, you know, can I do this? You know, all right, they want me to come speak at the nursing home. Well, you know, those people are going to be lonely at Christmas, and I need to figure out, I want to try to figure out how to do it. But if I so crowd my schedule with activity that my family suffers continually because of it, and notice that word continually, I'm
mm-hmm.
making a big mistake.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So we plan, we look ahead and basically say, is this even possible? But am I also sacrificing all my family time just to say I've got something else to do? That's problem number one, is not planning.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think, you know, and Christmas and, you know, that weird time now almost between Halloween almost and New Year has gotten so, it's almost a whole quarter of your year if you think about it. But it
yeah.
gets so jam packed with activity that, all right, you have to say, I can do this, I can't do this. I can figure out how to make this work with my family and my family not sacrifice continually because of it. So I can't plan everything. I can't plan a death. I can't plan a funeral home. I can't plan a heart attack by, you know, one of our members. I can't plan those things. But there are some things I can plan.
Right. All right, so we plan properly, we run these things by our calendar and our family's calendar. What's number two?
Prepare for what you can't prepare for.
Now this one I can't wait, okay? You've lost me. Go just go. What is this one?
Yes, sir. This is a principle I live my life by. I've never heard anybody else talk about it. And I don't know, maybe I'm just the weirdest person alive and don't amen me there, I don't, but I'm not as weird as Jerry Barber, at least, okay? I'm getting there, I'm just not there yet. But
can I amen that?
Yeah. You prepare what you can't prepare for. Now, by this, okay, let me kind of walk you through this. If I've got a phone call that I've got to make, I've got to call Brother Billy, and I know Brother Billy is a jerk. And I know he treats people like a jerk, and he's just difficult to deal with. I literally sit down before the phone call, and I write out. Now, I anticipate he's going to say this. I anticipate he's going to say this. I anticipate he's going to say this. And if he says this, here's how I plan on responding. If he says this, here's how I plan on responding. If he says this, here's how I plan on responding. You plan for it. I know, and Adam, you don't want to think about it. I didn't want to think about it. Your dad's a great guy, but your dad's going to die someday.
Mm-hmm.
In all likelihood, you will be asked to be a part of the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't plan for your dad's death, but you can plan for your dad's death because you know what's going to happen. So right. When I say you plan for what you can't prepare for, you know there's certain things that there's no way I'm going to be prepared for when my dad dies.
Right.
But can I plan for it? So when you think about your scheduling and making memories with your family in this busy time of year, all right, as I said a minute ago, I can't plan for a funeral. You know, I mean, you know, Joe and Sally were driving to, you know, their grandparents' house for Thanksgiving, and there was a wreck, and Sally died.
Right.
I can't call that family and say, you know, I really hate it, but, you know, I've got Thanksgiving supper with my family tonight, and I can't, you can't do that. No compassionate Christian can do that, much less a minister. So, how do you do that with your family? Because the larger the church you work with and the larger your life, the more there's going to be these things that come up that you can't prepare for. So what I decided to do with my children, actually when they were young, was I tried to give them rewards for the sacrifices that they had to make because of what dad does. Now, the milkman, the plumber, they have to make sacrifices too.
Mm-hmm.
But their sacrifice is a little bit different than ours. The plumber can say to somebody, no, I can't come fix your drain. I'm with my family. He cannot answer his phone. Now, is he going to get weird calls in the middle of the night at strange times? Yeah. But if he says, I can't fix your plumbing, what are you going to do? Well, you're going to call another plumber. But if your minister says, I can't come because of whatever, that's deep and hurtful. So there are certain things and my schedule is going to be different. So I reward them for sacrifices. You know, Philip, I know that I said that we would go Christmas shopping tonight. But they called and Brother Owsley's in the hospital and I've got to go see Brother Ray. And, so here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go see Brother Ray. We can talk about that more if we wanted to, but I could take Philip with me and make him a part of it. But if your children don't like that, don't force them to do that. But, I can't do that. You know, that's my life. I've got to go to the hospital. But tomorrow morning, we're not going to go to school tomorrow morning. I'm going to take you out of school. You're going to have a day off. And we're going to shop, you know, for a little bit longer, and then afterward we're going to go have pizza and ice cream together. The life of ministry, and I don't say this with any degree of anger or angst, is a life of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But we get to choose whether it's joyful sacrifice or painful sacrifice.
Right.
And I want to choose joyful sacrifice. And so my kids know you're going to sacrifice some because your dad preaches. But that doesn't mean your dad didn't love preaching and didn't love these people. In fact, that's why he does it. So prepare for what you can't prepare for. That was a lot of words, I know, but hopefully that made some sense.
Well, it did, and what you said near the end maybe made something pop in my mind. Sometimes we go visiting with our kids or something, you know, visit some older people in their homes or something, and we say, now we're not doing this because daddy's the preacher. We're doing this because we're Christians.
Yeah.
And that's a great message, but sometimes they need to hear that daddy is doing this because he is a preacher. Sometimes they need to hear that, no one else is going to be called on to do this funeral. Daddy's going to be called to this funeral, or daddy's going to be called to the hospital because he is the preacher. But I'm not going to give up time with you, or we're going to trade this. You're sacrificing time with daddy or with daddy and mommy, but we're going to make up for that. So I think that's very helpful.
I went to the funeral, Friday after Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving on Thursday, family was still in town. Friday there was a funeral. One of our members had a 93-year-old dad that died. His 93-year-old dad died. He'd been sick for years and years, Alzheimer's, and then finally everything just caught up with him. The guy died. Everybody knew he was going to die. He wasn't a member at Spring Meadows. The son was a member at Spring Meadows. And I went to the funeral. Guess who else was at the funeral from Spring Meadows? Nobody. It was 45 minutes away from here, and it was a long drive. It was the day after Thanksgiving. You know, if the situation had been different, there would have been a few folks showed up probably. Nobody else. And your kids are going to know when you say, well, I'm just doing this because I'm a Christian. They're going to spot that. They're going to look around and say, well, now, wait a minute. I mean, all these other people aren't Christians here. You're right. Sometimes I do these things because I preach.
All right, so we plan for what we cannot plan for. We're rewarding our kids for their sacrifice. What's number three?
Number three. This one butts against number two, but it's important to understand, and that is to properly set borders. To properly set borders. I can't say to the Owsley family, I'm not going to go to the hospital. Ray had a sudden heart attack, and I'm not going to go. We had a member yesterday. I got a phone call. Young man, he's in his 40s, maybe even 30s. He had stroke symptoms, and they rushed him to Vanderbilt Hospital, which is about an hour away from me, not quite an hour, 30 minutes an hour away. Mm-hmm. I ran up there, put everything aside. I'm not saying that for any bragging purposes. I couldn't say to Carrie, you know, man, I hate that he's in the hospital. Tell me how he's doing. No, I needed to go. There's some things I can't say no to. I won't go to the funeral. I can't say that and be a good minister. But you can set borders. If Sister Smith ends up at the hospital every other week, you know she's going to be in the hospital. You can say, all right, I'm going to wait a day. If that person that calls you every week just to complain calls, Christmas Eve, or you're reading the night before Christmas to your children, you can ignore that phone call. And it's not going to, you're not being a bad minister. That couple that's always fighting and wanting you to mediate, and let me tell you where I learned this at. When I was in Hamilton, my boys were both very young at this time, and we had a couple that was going through a divorce because the wife had an affair. And you've been there. You know how it is. I had to hold mm-hmm. this guy's hand every stinking day.
Mm-hmm.
May not be the right thing to say as a preacher, but that's the truth. It was he would call 10 times a day. He would come by the office and spend, and it was the same stuff. And I hurt with him and for him. But when he came by my house and knocked on my, well, first he called and I didn't answer. And then he came by my house. In the midst of us opening Christmas presents on Christmas Day, I step outside the house and I called him my name and I said, I'm really, really sorry, but not today. We can do this later. This can wait till tomorrow. Oh, but I need to talk to somebody. We can talk tomorrow. Now, I'm not saying use your family as an excuse. I think anybody who knows me would know that. But there are times when you can say, I have borders here. And one of my borders is, I don't take calls on Christmas and Christmas Eve and New Year's. All right, they call and somebody's committed suicide. I bet you they'll leave a message. And I will check the message. And if it's something severe and serious, I'll get right on it. I'll call right back. I'll go right over. But if it's just, Joe calling because he called yesterday and he hadn't talked to me today, he can wait. And so you've got to decide. Here's the board I'm going to set. Now I'd recommend that there be discussion with your leaders, with your elders, where you say, hey, here's what I can and can't do, and here's how I plan on handling this. And if they can't support you in that, well, I'm not sure what to tell you to do. But okay, that's number three.
Well, and that also lends itself to just the idea of the Christian family. And, when I was at Lebanon Road, especially in Nashville, we had a minister on staff who was an older gentleman, worked part-time there, and did a great work. He was really good at visiting hospitals. And I've told a lot of people, he kind of saved me in a lot of ways. Because if somebody was going to be in a hospital for a week, I couldn't run to every hospital in Nashville every single day.
Right.
But I knew he was going to go the first moment, pretty much, or within an hour or so, finding out someone was going to be in the hospital. But if we knew they were going to be there for 3 or 4 days, I knew I could wait a day if I had to. And wasn't trying to mean I was going to go see them, I was going to visit them, but it was the boundaries of sometimes family time, sometimes, frankly, it was sermon preparation time that needed to be protected. But it doesn't have to be, a fellow preacher. It can just be a member who's good at visiting the hospital, and you say, hey, today is my time with my family. I am going tomorrow to visit so-and-so in the hospital. Do you mind going today?
Yep.
And that's the way to keep those boundaries, but also help someone else.
Yeah. So yeah, so I think that's absolutely essential that we set some borders, some reasonable borders, and you know, just say, all right, here are the borders, and all right, sometimes you have to step across the border. That doesn't change the border. So okay,
right.
That's number three.
Number four.
And now we get to the subject at hand. Plan proactively for memories. Plan proactively for memories. I'm weird in every way, and I said that once, and I've said it twice now, so I guess it may be true. But if you tell me what I need to do to be good at something, I can be good at it if it's within my skill set to be good at. So women don't like this, but this is a reality for men. How often do you tell your wife you love her? Well, the answer to that should be however often she needs you to tell her you love her for it to both be meaningful to her and true to her. How do I know that? Well, I'm not exactly sure, but one way is to ask, you know, pay attention. You tell me what is expected of me, I can do it. So I do the same with family events and family memories. I plan proactively for them. I know that my children are going to look back and they're going to remember certain things we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just plan for them. I love the Psalms in so many places. I was thinking this morning and preparing for this about the verses in the Bible where it talks about generation to generation.
Yeah.
There are things that your parents did that when they did them, you thought, that's, I don't know about that. It's kind of silly. But you remember them to today. And what would be neat, I think, would be sometimes, not always, and don't be a booger about it, but to plan and say, you know, we always, on Christmas Eve, as a family when I was growing up, got together and opened one gift together as a family. And we're going to do that in this family, too. We laugh about it, but every year at Thanksgiving, we do what every other family does. We go around the table, and everybody tells us something they're thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that probably happened in our family for several generations now. It's kind of neat. It's passed down generation to generation. And while my kids may make fun of it when they're teenagers, and they may not like it, the fact is, when they get their own kids, and I'm no longer in the picture, they're going to look back and say, you know, we ought to do that. And
yeah.
There's a sweetness about it, and it builds connectivity from one generation to the next. And the reason you build connectivity from one generation to the next is because of faith, not because of fun. You do it because of faith. You want to pass that faith on to them. But if all that faith is a core set of doctrine and beliefs, and it doesn't involve some active, here's what we do that lives out our family and lives out our faith and shows our commitment to each other, then it will become hollow.
That is so true. And the idea of just passing it along. And like you said, it may be something when you were 13 or 15 and knew everything in the world, you thought was the silliest thing ever done. But when you're 23, 25 or 33, 35 and you've got a little 4-year-old running around, you think, yeah, that wasn't the dumbest idea in the world. Let's do that here. And it can be something around the holidays. It can be maybe a place your family went to vacation that you got bored of when you were 15, but now you think that might not be the worst place in the world to take my little kids. You know, those sorts of things that just build in over time that pass along. But have, as you said, there's something behind it of faith and intentionality as far as that goes.
Yep.
All right, number five.
Number five. And this one is similar to the last one, but I worded it this one on purpose. Push through the corniness. Push through the corniness.
Okay. That is the first time that phrase has ever been said on the Legacy of Faith the podcast, I guarantee.
you know, your kids are going to laugh at you. They are. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's all right. and have a little fun with your family. But and some of it's going to be corny, but you do it anyway. You push through it because those are the things they're going to remember the rest of their life. And they're going to laugh about it. My mom always, when we were growing up, she'd always say, anytime she called, anytime she wrote a note to us, anytime we were leaving the house, she'd always say, now, Mama's proud of you. Well, we'd laugh about that. We teased her about that. Well, man, to this day, that is so meaningful to me. And when my mom died, I will never forget, it'll be 10 years ago. We buried her 10 years ago this Christmas Eve. So it's, we're coming up on that anniversary. And when she died, I lost the one person in my life that I knew was always proud of me regardless of what happened. Now, that's not a slight against Dad or my wife or my kids or other people in my life that are important. But Mom expressed that so many times, and we teased her for it. But that is so meaningful to me today. If she'd stopped doing that because we teased her about it, you know, I would have lost that memory. Those things, there were certain things we did when our kids were little, Adam, that we did not even realize. And I remember one year we were getting ready for Easter and Easter egg hunting with the kids, and Andrew said, Mom, aren't you going to? And then he said, well, are we going to dye the eggs together tonight? That was the night before Easter, the Saturday night before Sunday. Are we going to? And Melanie said, and she didn't say it out loud, but she told me later, she said, I didn't realize we had done that together all these years. I just did it because I needed them to do something while I was trying to get this job done. So I let them help. But that was part of their Easter memory, you know. Well,
yeah.
There are certain things you do, and you don't even do them intentionally necessarily, but they become a part of who you are, and the kids are going to laugh about them. They're going to say it's corny and everything. But, okay, so every year at Christmas Eve, we go together as a family. We've done this now for 25 years, and we eat pizza together, and then we watch a movie together. Mm-hmm. And there is a podcast, an hour long, Adam, sometime, of all the silly, funny, crazy attempts we've had at finding a pizza place open on Christmas Eve.
Sure. I was actually thinking that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but the funny thing is we started her in Hamilton. And you know, when you preach, and I don't know how many people listen to your podcast or preachers, but when you preach, Christmas and holidays are different than for other people because of Sundays and Wednesdays. They're going to affect what you do. And so oftentimes, and because of where you live. I mean, your folks are in Kentucky. Leah's parents are over in the Jasper area. And I know Jasper's an hour away, so it's not that far away. But you're, what, 3-4 hours away from your folks?
About five, yeah.
If Christmas falls on a Sunday, in all likelihood, you have this big family tradition on Saturday night. You get together and do such and such with one set of the family or the other. Well, you're going to be preaching on Sunday. You can send your family along by themselves or not. Well, what we decided we were going to do is we're going to do something together as a family, regardless of where we lived on Christmas Eve. And so we're going to eat pizza together. And the first year it just kind of happened because the Pizza Hut in Hamilton was the only restaurant in town that was open after 6 o'clock. That's how it started. When we moved to Nashville, Adam, we thought, we'd done that probably 5 or 6 years when we moved to Nashville. We thought, oh, this would be easy. You know, everywhere in Nashville. Nashville was 10 times worse. We couldn't find anywhere open. And the best story, and I won't belabor it because I know we've got to think about time, but the best story was one year at Christmas when I went to Pizza Hut well in advance, a week in advance, and said, what are your hours Christmas Eve? We're going to close at 7 o'clock. All right, great. Are you sure? Yeah, we're sure. You're going to send people home early? No, we're going to be open until 7. I thought, yeah, sure. So Christmas Eve at lunch, I went by and said, hey, what are your hours? What time do you close now? We close at 7. I said, you sure? Yeah, we're sure. Positive, yeah, we're going to let our employees go home early, but if it's 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, we show up at Pizza Hut with my family, planned perfectly, and they are closed. I was so angry. It was hilarious. I was so mad. I thought, I'm going to teach my son how to handle anger properly. So I went to the door, and there was a little plaque on the door that said, in event of emergency or after hours, call number. I punched the number in my cell phone. I waited till I got back to the car, and I said, the boys, I want you all to hear this. So I called the Pizza Hut. I called that number, and I said, I'm very sorry. I hate to disturb you on Christmas Eve. I got an answer machine. So I hate to disturb you on Christmas Eve, but I just want to let you know, I'm sitting outside, and I said, your so-called Pizza Hut.
So-called.
With my two children, and I went through the list of, you know, I called 7 days ago. I came by 7 days ago. I came by earlier today. And you're not open. I just want you to know you have really messed up a very important holiday tradition for us. I don't mind that you closed early. In fact, I'm glad that you did. But you should have planned better than that. You should have let us know when I came by there's a possibility you closed early. We could have done something different. And I went through this whole thing, okay? And then I said, thank you. And I hung up. I get back to my house in Nashville after whatever we did that evening. I got back to the house, and there was an answer machine was blinking. There was a message on it. I go to the answer machine, and I look at the number, and it's the Pizza Hut number. So I called my sons in the room. Hey, come here. I want y'all to hear what happens when you handle your anger problem. You know, you handle it right. Push the button, and the girl on the other end said, Mr. Jenkins, this is Katie. I don't know what number you were trying to get in touch with, but this is my cell phone.
Oh, no.
So, you think my boys don't remember that story? I mean,
at least someone named Katie knows your plight and knows your tradition and probably felt sorry for you for, you know, 2.5 seconds.
Oh, she went on and she said, I am so sorry that what happened to you, but I don't have anything at all to do with Pizza. Oh, great. So, but yeah, to this day, I mean, to this day, we will get together. Now, we've amended it some. Let me tell you how we've amended it, and this is important. I think you have to be flexible. Since both my boys are in ministry, and since grandparents are alive on both sides of their family, and even great grandparents on their moms on their wife's family side, and they had to be, we decided we used to travel. I don't know if you do this item, but we used to travel. We would travel 1,000 miles the week of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
In all our driving to Birmingham, driving to Roanoke, driving back home. Driving back to Athens, Alabama, driving. I mean, you know, it was endless, and we were worn out. So what we do now is a week before Christmas. In fact, this year it'll be on Saturday, the 19th. Saturday, I think it's Saturday the 19th. We'll do Christmas at my house with my boys. Now, it does several things for it. One, it gets out of the way, and they don't have to worry about, are we going to offend mom and dad because we spend too much time at this parent's house or this parent's house. We're fine with it. Y'all, you know, you get to spend Christmas with those people, and we're perfectly fine. We have sons, not daughters. That's important, I guess. But that helps. The other thing is Pizza Hut's always open a week before Christmas. So not to worry about that.
Takes care of the problem.
Takes care of the problem.
Solves all kinds of problems. That's right.
I've never known a Pizza Hut that closed a week ahead of time for Christmas.
That would be having a bit too much of a border to go back to. one of your earlier points there. If you close a week early, you've got a little bit of boundary issues there.
Yeah. Those are my 5 points. Hopefully it'll make some sense.
Well, Dale, this has been excellent. And I know not all of our listeners are preachers, but every family can gain from these, because every family, like we began, pretty much every family is busy to some level for different reasons. Maybe it's jobs. Maybe it's most people work. Maybe they've got a kid with special needs. There's all kinds of reasons, but we all want to make memories with our kids. We want to have those things that they remember, and you've given us some invaluable reminders today and pointers today of how to do just that, how to stay busy, you know, stay active and involved, but to make sure that we don't neglect those wonderful treasures God has given to us. And Dale, we appreciate you
so much as a man and as a dad and an influencer, and I appreciate you for joining us today on the program.
Thank you, Adam. Always great to be with you, and enjoyed being with you again today. It reminded me of good days in the past, so thank you for letting me be with you today.
Well, I think you can see why we wanted to have Dale Jenkins on the program, on not just on any subject, but particularly on this subject. Pointers he has given to us were very powerful and very helpful. The stories were pretty good too, weren't they? Dale is just a good man, and I just appreciate so much being able to call him a friend and someone that I lean on a lot for advice. And I hope that this has encouraged you and your family to make memories, to not be so busy that you forget to involve your children and to make memories for them that they'll remember, but also to remember that they are making memories of a lot of things that we just do without even thinking about it. Just traditions that we have, sometimes almost mindlessly, that are built into their consciousness and their memories and things that they look back on fondly, just like you do on some memories in your family. We hope that you have enjoyed this week's program and hope that you'll be back with us again next week. If you would take just a moment and jump over on iTunes and give us a rating and review, that helps us a lot there, not to our own glory, but to just make sure this information gets out to as many people as possible. It takes about 5 seconds to leave a rating and about 5 or 10 seconds more to leave a review, and that would help us a great deal there. If you would do that, we would appreciate it very much. Thank you for joining us this week on A Legacy of Faith, the podcast. Remember, until next week, your family can go to heaven. Just make sure you go there together.